Welcome to the UK's only weekly FM and DAB radio show about transport and design. It's The Catchcast, and I'm Mark Ovenden. Today's guest is one of the best known and most respected YouTube influencers in transport. He's developed a channel with over 1,000 transport-themed videos that have been seen by, well, almost 100 million times. Welcome to The Catchcast, Jago Hazard.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
We are going to get into your fascinating channel, Jago, but I just want to ask you, and I ask all my guests the same first question, when and how did you first get interested in the subject of transport?
Well, I think it was kind of inevitable. I mean, my dad was very much into trains, although he's more of a petrol head these days. My great-granddad was a station master on the London, Midland and Scottish Railway.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he started out as a porter with the North Staffordshire Railway, sort of worked his way up. He was a signalman, and then he was a station master at, I believe it was at War.
So transport's always been in your family. Did you have much interest in it as a kid? Did you have your own model railway or anything?
Oh, definitely. No, I mean, one of my earliest memories is visiting the Dart Valley Railway. I mean, inevitably, like most 80s kids, I used to watch Thomas the Tank Engine. Had the railway series books, learnt to read through those. And of course, living in London, we used to take the train a lot.
Have you got any memories of doing naughty things like, I think I used to do this, of buying one ticket for one station and riding to the end of the lines and that kind of crazy thing?
I must admit, I was mostly a good boy when it came to that sort of thing. I must admit, during my impoverished student days, I did become quite adept at figuring out when the ticket barriers would be open.
We won't discuss that, obviously.
No.
And in your student days, did you study anything to do with trains or transport in any way, or urbanism?
Not really, no. I studied English and theatre, which I do think they served me well in terms of my current career, in that it sort of helps you to construct a narrative out of factual information, as it were.
Mm.
No, it was on the whole not very transport orientated.
And what sort of job did you do then after you left studying?
Oh, well, I did a little bit of theatre-y stuff, but mostly my professional career was in medicine, in fact. Well,
oh,
not in medicine, but in a medical admin capacity, very much paying the rent.
And whilst you were rolling around in medicine capacity, did you carry on your sort of childhood interest in transport, amassing, I don't know, books or publications or in things to interest you in transport?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I've always been a fan of sort of exploring cities and, you know, riding the rails and so forth. But to be honest, it was something that really only, it was really only a hobby. I did consider the concept of writing a book, except then somebody else wrote the book that I was intending to write, as it were.
I hope that wasn't me.
No, it was, well, I won't say who it was, because despite the fact that they have absolutely nothing to do with sniping me there, I wouldn't want to imply any bad blood, as it were.
So at what point then did you notice that this interest you had in transport and urbanism and things that may have been built but weren't, at what point did you begin to realise, I kind of need to do something about this?
Well, it really happened by accident. Because what happened was, I sort of had this idea for a while of starting a YouTube channel just for a bit of fun, which I did, and I just made various sort of videos on various subjects.
Mm.
So I started this channel, and I was making various videos, not with any particular aim in mind. I made a video about the underground. I don't even remember what. Oh, yes. It was about the deep level shelters on the Northern Line for no particular reason other than I just thought it would be an interesting thing to talk about. That video got significantly more views than any of the others. So I kept going along those lines. And then it really took off during the pandemic.
Okay. We're going to get to your channel in a minute, but you've also been a cameo in a few other people's video channels, haven't you, Jago?
I have, yes.
Tell us about those.
Well, so I was invited by Jay Foreman to appear in his video on the development of the Tube Map, in which I had the honour of playing his version of Harry Beck, which was a lot of fun. You know, I got to fool around in ridiculous glasses.
Why did you have those ridiculous oversized glasses in that video?
Well, because Jay's idea was that Harry Beck should be like a massive nerd. So the shorthand should be that he should be this guy in, like, you know, in braces and with very thick glasses. And yeah, just sort of taking the nerd stereotype absolutely to its absurdest degree.
And so well you two do it. So we've heard the background, Jago, but please tell us really sort of the main reasons after you did your first couple of videos why you decided to get into making this sort of almost like a full-time channel.
Well, really, it was opportunity, I guess, because during lockdown, I think probably because people were quite bored, that was when views started really taking off, and it sort of just grew from there. I mean, it took a long time for me to sort of finally take the plunge and go full time, because, well, like most YouTubers, I sort of live in constant fear that it's all going to suddenly go away. Yeah, I mean, the viewers sort of kept coming back, so it felt like something that I could... Because the thing is, what I sort of heard of YouTube, that, you know, you'd be looking at years and years before you even start making money.
Mm.
So I think I was particularly fortunate. You know, I was one of the few people who actually benefited from the pandemic, I suppose.
Mm.
But yeah, I was also sort of in the fortunate position that I was a key worker, so I was going into London, so I did have some ability to actually film while I was there.
Yeah, film some new material, yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine that researching and writing and shooting and editing, of course, must take a huge amount of time.
Oh, it does. I mean, it's editing is the big time sink. Like, that's... I've got better at timetabling things these days, so, you know, if I timetable things right, I can get all my editing done sort of in the first 3 days of the week and then spend the other two scripting and filming. But it's sort of difficult. I mean, it's, to be honest, it's quite rare for me to have a 5-day week. It's normally 6 or sometimes 7, and I am often working quite late at night. It's definitely something where you need to enjoy the job. It's like I say, with a lot of creative processes, the hard part is not being able to do it. It's being willing to put up with everything that comes with it.
Mm, the amount of time it must take. And so what, yeah. You're doing approximately one video a week, are you? Or
3.
Oh, crikey. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I do tend to, if it's sort of a really long, in-depth video, I might give myself a bit of a break. But yeah, normally it's about 3 videos, but they're only like, you know, 8 to 12 minutes long usually. So I would say my overall output is probably not much different from the average YouTuber, really.
Mm. Well, let's talk about the subject matter you focus on. I mean, you mentioned that one of your first videos was about the Northern Line shelters. Talk to us about what the first few subjects that you did were about and how you went about making them.
Well, I picked out subjects that kind of interested me. I was initially thinking, you know, I didn't want to cover specific stations or anything, although that soon changed. I had a few books already, so I kind of went, I did go to them. It is possible to do a certain amount of research online, although these days I prefer to avoid that if I can, because, well, there's very little editorial control. A lot of it was sort of going out on site. I was filming on my phone, so, you know, there wasn't much by way of setup. I had to teach myself editing. That was a complicated thing.
Mm. And what about the subject matter then? You did the Northern Line Shelters. Can you remember what 2, 3, 4 of your earliest videos were about?
Well, I did one on Pimlico Station and the kind of development of the Victoria Line. So, as I say, that whole not being too specific thing didn't really work out.
That is an amazing line, actually, isn't it? And I think you did another one later on about the many different potential branches or directions that the Victoria Line may well have taken, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I mean, that actually started out as a talk I gave, but I was sort of quite pleased with the way it went. So I thought, well, you know, let's put this online, as it were.
Now, I think I'm right in saying you've made over 1,000 videos now, Jago. This is quite incredible archive to look through. Can you maybe remember some of the ones that are the most fun or interesting, or some of the ones that were really popular?
Well, the most popular one was actually not about transport at all.
Oh.
It was about number 20 Fenchurch Street, the walkie-talkie building, and, well, the title of the video was The Building That Lasered Cars, which I think was a big reason for its success, you know, the old clickbait. But I really didn't, to be honest, I didn't really like that video. Because it was just, it was very much an afterthought. It was just a case of, well, I have this footage, so I'll do that. Before that, another really popular one was called Walking Through the Rotherhithe Tunnel is a Really Bad Idea. Which, again, I think it attracted a certain amount of interest because people want to see other people suffer on YouTube, I guess.
I've done that walk when I was younger, and it really feels like a long way.
It does. I mean, it's absolutely horrible. It's one that I would absolutely never do again. Well, unless I decided to remake the video, I suppose.
Walking through the Rotherhithe Tunnel with a load of police escorts.
Yeah.
There was a great story, wasn't there, that the original East London line, the first part of that, was actually opened as a pedestrian foot tunnel, but then it sort of fell into disrepair because it was sort of dangerous and it was full of ladies of the night, as they called them, and pickpockets.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, it was one of those. I mean, I think the problem was that it was just not really, it was intended as a road tunnel, so it had all these sort of alcoves and things for safety, but as a foot tunnel, they provided sort of secluded spots, as it were,
for naughty people to leap upon the gentlemen who walked underneath.
Indeed, and who absolutely were not expecting to find anything like that or looking it out specifically.
Of course not. You do seem fascinated, if you don't mind me saying, with the strange and obscure. Good man, by the way, good for you. Can you talk with us about some of your favourite mad and maybe never realised transport schemes?
Oh, there's so many to choose from. Mm. What I'm quite fascinated by is the ones that seem like a good idea but were ahead of their time. I mean, recently I did a video on the ring rail scheme, which at heart was a really good idea, but it sort of came along at the wrong time, and I also think its promoters got a bit overexcited.
Yeah, I saw that video. They had some pretty mad ideas for Clapham Junction Station, I believe.
Yeah, they were going to just completely move it about half a mile up the line, which, so the whole concept of ring rail, the selling point was that it could use existing lines, much like the modern London Overground does, to create this new metro system fairly cheaply. And then they kind of said, oh, and by the way, we're just going to move the largest and busiest railway line, the largest and busiest station in the country, half a mile up the line, gonna have to demolish a bunch of streets, gonna have to widen the tracks. But it's still a low budget proposal.
So give us your money and let's move.
Yeah.
Another one of my favourites of yours was you talk quite often about Aldwych Station, and there was something called the Kingsway Line, I believe.
Oh, the Kingsway Tram Tunnel.
Mm.
Yes, that's a fascinating one, because, I mean, again, it's in some ways it was ahead of its time. It's the concept of separating a tram line out from the street so the trams aren't contending with traffic, which, of course, cities like Brussels would later do themselves in the 70s. So again, very ahead of its time. You can still see the entrance to the old tram tunnel. In fact, if you watch the right movies, you can see inside the tram tunnel.
Wow.
In The Batman, it's the entrance to the Batcave, which I must admit did take me out of the action slightly. Like, you know, Batman's jetting off into action and I'm thinking, hang on, that's Hoban.
Yeah, in fact, if you look at a lot of films and their portrayal of the underground, you see things that puts you off the story. There was a James Bond one that they did once, which was supposedly on the District Line, and they kept cutting away to deep level tubes. I'm thinking, no, that's the wrong place. That's wrong.
Yeah. Oh, Charing Cross. Yeah.
You really do cover quite a lot of unmade, unfinished and unbuilt schemes. I think I remember seeing you did one about the one from, was it Kennington down to somewhere in South Croydon or Sanderstead, somewhere down that way?
Oh, yes. Now, I believe there was a proposal to extend the Northern Line that way. I think I did cover this quite a long time ago. But yeah, there have been all sorts of proposals to extend the underground into South London, which somehow never seem to actually get built. It's like there's a curse on this one specific part of the city.
Oh, there does seem to be like a curse on South London. You also talk a bit about the unfulfilled Bakerloo line and several other schemes that never got to parts of South London.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a real shame because it's just, there's just been so many and they just never come to pass. For instance, you know, there were proposals to extend the Victoria line to Croydon and Herne Hill and all sorts of places, and the Bakerloo into Camberwell. And I mean, back in the 1890s, they were talking about building a tube line from King William Street to Brixton.
Mm.
But yeah, just between trams and existing trains and stuff, everybody seems to be a little bit scared.
Now, I'm going to ask you about some of your videos done about subjects outside London. But before we go there, I wonder if I can get from you your favourite London tube station.
Maida Vale.
Yeah, the one, I mean, Maida Vale is the one I always say when I'm asked this. Mm. It's certainly the one that springs to mind.
I know, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the reason I love it is because it's sort of your classic Leslie Green style, but more so. Because it was actually designed by Stanley Heaps, who I think is a very underrated architect.
Mm.
He tended to sort of assist Leslie Green and later Charles Holden, who are both much more famous architects. But I feel like his Leslie Green style stations are actually prettier than Leslie Green's stations. Mm.
Kilburn Park's another one, isn't it? I think he was involved
in that. Yes, that was the other one he did, yeah. Basically, they were extending the Bakerloo line, but during construction, I believe it was Leslie Green sadly passed away, so Heaps took over.
Hmm. Crikey, so if they had have extended the Bakerloo line south, we might have had some nice Stanley Heaps stations down at, I don't know, Herne Hill or wherever.
Indeed. It would have been an interesting thing to see.
Oh, goodness me, wouldn't it just? Yeah, if only those things had come to pass. Now, your knowledge of London's transport is absolutely exemplary, and I could pick your brains on this for hours, worth anyone exploring your older videos. But you do also do other places, don't you? Oh, you've done the Amsterdam Metro, the Brussels, strangely named pre-metro. I think you did something about Dublin's Guinness freight line, and you've even been to the Isle of Wight. Tell us about some of your forays outside London, Diego.
Well, a lot of them have come about sort of by accident. The Isle of Wight one was, I was actually on holiday with friends and we were looking for something to do, and the suggestion came up of the Isle of Wight steam railway, which was not actually my suggestion. I was kind of saying, well, don't feel like you have to do a steam railway just because I'm here, kind of thing. But we did. And I thought, well, you know, since I'm here. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it sort of comes about by chance. For instance, I first encountered the Brussels system last year because I was invited to speak at a conference.
Mm-hmm.
And I did kind of think, well, actually, you know what? This is a very different system. So I returned earlier this year and then I kind of thought, well, where else has an interesting system and also is a city I'd like to visit? And so Amsterdam, I'm planning on covering others in the future, like Dublin is on my list. Plus, there's others that I mean, one I really want to do is the Tyne and Wear Metro, which is perhaps not so exotic as Amsterdam, but is a very interesting system in its own right.
Oh, it really is. And it's so darn practical and well designed that people don't really talk about it, but it just serves such a perfect purpose. And such a shame that more English provincial cities never got to build something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the model for things like the Docklands Light Railway, of course, which, as such, I feel like just about every modern light rail system in Britain owes a great deal to the Tyne and Wear Metro for pioneering all this stuff.
We really do. And, of course, it's got the beautiful typeface designed by Margaret Calvert, which was then also used on the Docklands.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the design is absolutely gorgeous. And I must admit that is a consideration when I'm looking at systems to cover, like, does it look interesting?
It really helps. It really, really helps. I mean, I've been lucky and fortunate enough to go to Washington, D.C., and there's a metro that's been fantastically well designed. It just looks brilliant. I mean, a bit half finished with these exposed concrete tunnels. I don't know if you've been to that one, but
I haven't.
Yeah, it's really worth having a look at. The better you design the metro, I think, the more likely people are to use it.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I'm currently writing a script on the Cairo monorail, which has just opened, and they've clearly invested a lot into it, and I feel like, well, that's the way to go. Just create a useful, attractive system from the get-go. People will use it, and that, in turn, will justify further expansion.
Well, that seems to be like the best place we could possibly come to end our chat, because I think we could go on nattering for hours. But we do need to stop. Thank you for joining us today, Jago.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You can find all of Jago's 1,000 videos on YouTube. Just search for Jago Hazard. That's JagoHazard. He's also on social media like Instagram, and basically he's all over the internet. Next week's Catcast is not to be missed. Please do join us then.